In this case, we don't know what circumstances led up to this mid-air collision.
Five people are dead after two planes collide in western Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, August 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, reaction to the Attorney General's legal opinion saying marijuana sharing clubs are not legal.
We saw ourselves, our club, as really no different from the VFW, but they serve alcohol and we serve cannabis.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
Alaska State Troopers report there are no survivors from a mid-air plane collision that occurred around 11 a.m. today, 6 miles northwest of Russian Mission. There were five people on board two aircraft. Clint Johnson with the Alaska Region NTSB says state troopers are on the scene with a Black Hawk helicopter, and three NTSB investigators are on their way to the crash site.
Hopefully the team of three NTSB investigators will be able to reach the site tomorrow and hopefully be able to document both of these accident sites.
Johnson says he's receiving conflicting information at this point about the crash, and investigators are reviewing the limited radar data available from the area. Where the planes were flying to and how they collided is unknown right now.
Basically, what it comes down to is see and avoid. However, in this case, we don't know what circumstances led up to this mid-air collision.
Johnson says wreckage from both planes landed a considerable distance from each other. In an email, the Alaska National Guard says the airplanes were a Hagland Aviation Cessna 208 Caravan carrying three people and a Super Cub from Renfro's Alaska Adventures carrying two people. The email says at 11 a.m., an aviation company contacted the Alaska Rescue Coordination Center, saying they had lost radio contact with an aircraft and it was overdue. 15 minutes later, state troopers reported another aircraft overdue. A third aircraft flying overhead spotted the wreckage. The National Guard dispatched a Black Hawk helicopter and two flight medics from Bethel around noon to the crash site. The Alaska State Troopers also responded. Bethel Station KYUK reached out to Renfro's Alaskan Adventures and Hagland Aviation, but both companies declined comment. Private clubs that allow people to consume marijuana in exchange for a fee are illegal, according to Alaska Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth. She issued an opinion today that also says offering marijuana samples to paying patrons may violate state criminal law that bars distributing marijuana without a valid commercial license. The State Marijuana Control Board has authorized retail marijuana stores to allow marijuana consumption on their premises, but Lindemuth says social clubs are like any other place of business where marijuana consumption is not allowed by law. Department of Law spokeswoman Corey Mills reinforces the point.
If that place is not a licensed retail marijuana store, consuming marijuana there is unlawful.
The ballot question that Alaskans approved in 2014 allowed the state to tax and regulate marijuana retailers, but it banned the public use of marijuana, and Lindemuth says social clubs are public places like other unlicensed businesses. Mills says a person who operates a social club that provides marijuana samples would be violating the law if they receive a fee.
Without a license from the Marijuana Control Board, a person may not possess more than 1 ounce of marijuana or transfer marijuana for any sort of payment.
Linda Muth issued the opinion in response to a request from Chris Haddock, the commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Clubs have either started or are planned in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Homer, but the opinion appears to put those clubs in doubt. One business that's sure to be affected by the ruling is Potluck Events, a marijuana cannabis club in Anchorage that's been open for about a year and a half. In that time, the club has charged dues for access to an event space where members can use and trade cannabis. The club has had a murky but diplomatic legal relationship with state and local officials. Though the owners couldn't be reached for comment, Lance Wells, Potluck's attorney, says he's still digesting the ruling and can't yet say what it means for his clients. In Homer, where a cannabis social club existed for 2 months earlier this year, founding member Lindy Ann Sarno says she would like to see the issue go to court with arguments on both sides. She says her club members were just following their First Amendment right to assemble, and they shouldn't be treated any differently than people going to other private clubs.
When we passed the ballot initiative, the title of the initiative was to tax and regulate marijuana like alcohol. And so we saw ourselves, our club, as really no different from the VFW. They freely assemble. They have a club. It's a private club. You can't get into it unless you're a member. But they serve alcohol, and we serve cannabis. So in very many ways, we are being discriminated against.
How the opinion will be enforced will be determined by local police, state troopers, and the Marijuana Control Board, like other marijuana laws, according to Mills with the Law Department. The chairman of Alaska's Republican Party is suggesting that another election be held in a state House district where ballot issues during the primary prompted questions about the election results. Tuckerman Babcock said the House District 40 primary was handled so poorly that the true victor isn't clear. He cautioned the Division of Elections director against certifying the results. Unofficial results show Democrat Ben Westlake beating Democratic State Representative Benjamin Nagiak by 21 votes. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, who oversees state elections, has said the division was aware of reports that voters in one precinct received the Republican ballot and the ballot with Democratic, Libertarian, and Alaskan Independence Party candidates. He has said since a candidate's name appears only on one ballot, no one could vote more than once for any one candidate. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, raising the alarm on a lethal mix of opioids.
There are many drugs that are dangerous, alcohol, meth, but heroin right now with this fentanyl, it's a hazard to everyone.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Arctic is wild, remote, and untouched. See how contemporary artists challenge the mythical ideal of the North in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, View from Up Here, the Arctic at the Center of the World, on view through October the 2nd. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum. More than 20,000 Alaskans are part of the Salmon Project family through stories, photography, competitions, and a lot of fun building community through salmon. Join the conversation on Facebook. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Fairbanks police fatally shot a man yesterday. FPD spokeswoman Yumi McCulloch says officers were called to a robbery and assault at the Alaska Motel on South Cushman Street. She says a man later identified as 28-year-old Fairbanks resident James Robert Richards was reported to have aimed a gun at a woman in a motel room.
A short time after that, it was also relayed to officers that a shot was fired. And once the officers got there, they found the suspect leaving the Alaska Motel, still armed, on foot, so they followed him.
McCulloch says officers repeatedly ordered Richards to drop his gun, but he refused.
The police deployed their tasers, but those were ineffective, and at one point, the armed suspect grabbed an elderly man waiting at the bus stop and was kind of putting him in between, trying to put him between himself and officers. So at a last resort, the suspect was fatally shot.
McCulloch says the officer who shot Richards has been placed on administrative leave. His name will be released in 3 days. McCulloch says the incident was captured on video.
Most of the officers on scene had body cameras on, and we do have in-car cameras also.
McCulloch says the recordings and other case evidence will be reviewed by the State Office of Special Prosecution. In Quinnahock during August, four people overdosed and one woman died after using heroin that contained a large amount of fentanyl. Law enforcement say the heroin supply in other parts of Western Alaska is likely laced with the powerful, often deadly, added drug, and they're putting the word out that things could soon get worse in the region. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Fentanyl-laced heroin is on the streets in Dillingham, says State Trooper Sergeant Luis Nieves, the supervisor for the Bristol Bay region.
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubts at this point. We're waiting on lab results to confirm what we believe is that the heroin that's coming into this area is the same heroin that's being distributed throughout the state, especially throughout Western Alaska. It's all coming from the same source, which is in Anchorage.
The state crime lab put out the warning after the overdoses in Quinnahock that there was more fentanyl in the sampled drugs than heroin. According to the DEA, fentanyl is the most potent opioid available for use in medical treatment, 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine and 30 to 50 times more potent than heroin. Fentanyl is potentially lethal, even at very low levels. That means a user's regular dose of heroin, perhaps unbeknownst to them, could be deadly.
This is probably one of the most dangerous drugs ever to hit this state. There are many drugs that are dangerous, alcohol, meth, but heroin, right now with this fentanyl, it's a hazard to everyone.
Nieves says fentanyl residue can be absorbed through the skin, leaving even non-users vulnerable to exposure if they're around someone who is using. Authorities say the suppliers are cutting the heroin with fentanyl, which is a prescription painkiller, to extend the supply and to extend the high.
Remember, heroin addicts, at the end of the day, are doing what we call, or what they've called, chasing the dragon, which is they're trying to replicate that very first experience they had with heroin. And that's why they have to increase their dosages over time. So as they're chasing this dragon, they're always looking for the next stronger supplement. And the fentanyl is meeting that demand, but it's also killing people.
Sergeant Nieves says local authorities are working with information that more heroin is inbound to the region soon. He suspects targeting the payout of BBNC dividend checks this Friday.
These wolves that prey on innocent people know that there's going to be plenty of money in the Bristol Bay region, where everyone here has been working their tails off fishing. And, you know, now they're getting ready to get their checks and they're getting ready to get their dividends. And they're just easy prey. People have put Dillingham on the map, but they put it on the map for a negative reason. And that it's a great place to sell this type of product.
Nieves says authorities responded to a recent overdose call in Dillingham he suspects was tied to fentanyl. The person was hallucinating and displaying other strange behavior not normally associated with heroin alone. He believes the person would have died had emergency care not been so close, a luxury not afforded to most living outside of Dillingham.
I think our ER is going to start filling up with these people, especially now that these checks are going to be here and these predators from Anchorage are going to be here. I would not be surprised if there are locals that are going to Anchorage right now to go pick this product up and bring it here. And if they can hear me, well, shame on them. And know that we're going to be looking for you and we're going to do everything we can to stop you from bringing this stuff into this community.
Sergeant Nieves says there are no easy solutions to intercept the heroin before it gets into Bristol Bay, though he says the region would be well served to have a want investigator back. The CDC and the DEA have put out the warning nationwide that the abuse of fentanyl has been on the rise over the past 2 years and is causing an alarming number of overdoses, though the exact figures have been hard to pin down. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Federal funding is coming to rural Alaska for water and sewer projects, and a big chunk of it is going to the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
Lisa Mensah, U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Development Undersecretary, arrived in Bethel from Washington, D.C. on Tuesday to deliver the news.
And I have the joy of announcing a combined total of $27 million in our water and environmental programs here in rural Alaska.
Let's break down that money in the Delta. EEQ will get water and sewer lines for the first time. Tuksuk Bay will finish hooking up its homes to its water and sewer system. St. Mary's will expand its waste heat recovery system, which will save the community about $10,000 a year in energy cost. The city of Bethel will get four new water trucks, 3 new sewer trucks and rehabilitate its sewage lagoon, which means dredging 30 years of sewage from a tundra pond. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation will continue its program to help operate water and sewer systems across the Delta, and 7 Delta communities will assess their water and sewer needs and how to meet them. David Beveridge with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium says these projects affect the quality of life and health of rural communities.
Studies have shown that there's a strong relationship between infectious disease and sanitation services in rural Alaska.
For example, an infant living in a community with honey buckets in the region is 5 times more likely to be hospitalized from a lower respiratory infection and 11 times more likely to be hospitalized with pneumonia than an infant in the rest of the United States. Running water also means people wash their hands more often and use fresh water when they do. After a series of speakers from Alaska and D.C. talked about the various projects, Dan Winkleman, CEO and president of YKHC, ended the gathering with a thank you and a reminder that there's still a lot of work to do.
Although we have been making progress, I think it's much too slow for a lot of people that are out in the villages. They're the more remote communities now, so they're harder to get to. The costs are going to be expensive, but we still need to endure and make sure that we finish getting the people hooked up to water and sewer.
Winkleman says to finish providing running water alone in the Delta, about 1,500 homes would have to be connected. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The Bethel Family Clinic held a groundbreaking ceremony yesterday to celebrate the new facility under construction. Board and staff members say replacing the aging red building had been a long time coming. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
The Bethel Family Clinic board members gathered at the clinic on Tuesday to celebrate the groundbreaking of a new building. Executive Director Leticia Gwynn says this only recently became possible.
This has been at least 10 years in the works. It's been on our strategic plan of the boards for many, many years. Funding opportunities just have not come through until just recently. The current facility we're in is 30-plus years old, and so definitely in need of expanding.
Federal funding for the new facility was approved this last May. The rest of the funding came through fundraisers. The current building, resembling a big red water tank or a silo, has 6 exam rooms, 1 behavioral health office, and employee offices on the first floor. The second floor is mainly used for administration purposes, and the third floor is an apartment used by a healthcare provider. Gwynn says the building was originally built as a bed and breakfast by brothers Stephen and Duane Constantino.
The building was built by the Constantino brothers back in the 1980s, I believe. It's actually 2 Quonset huts, one on end and one straight across. And the woodwork inside of it is still holding up beautifully. They did a beautiful job building it. And it's held up very, very well, very little breakage.
The new building will sit right next to the current building on the intersection of 4th Avenue and Main Street in Bethel. Operations Director Kyle McGrath says the new building will help expand and add to the services they offer to their patients.
The new facility will be 9 exam rooms, which will mainly be our medical staffing there, medical services. The current facility we are in, we're planning on turning that into more behavioral health as well as dental.
Kyle says the new facility is expected to be completed and put to use by July 2018 at the earliest or mid-2019 at the latest. The Bethel Family Clinic is a federally qualified health center. It was established in 1981 and serves the medical and behavioral health needs for the Yukon-Kuskokwim area. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
On your calendar, summer may keep going well into September. But in climate terms, today marks the official end of summer. That's because June, July, and August are the hottest months of the year, and in Alaska, it was really hot this summer. Continuing that trend, 9 communities around the state broke daily high temperature records yesterday, including Kenai at 71 degrees, Bethel at 72, and Anchorage at 74 degrees. Brian Brett Schneider is a climatologist in Anchorage who closely tracks Alaska climate data and trends. Alaska's Energy Desk is checking in with him regularly as part of the segment Ask a Climatologist. Brett Schneider told Energy Desk editor Annie Feit that this summer is the warmest on record for Anchorage.
And for really for most stations in Alaska, it's been a top 5 warmest. A few places like Fairbanks is the 10th warmest, but very warm from north to south, from east to west.
Has Anchorage been the warmest of the warm in terms of records?
Well, not so much in terms of absolute temperature, because we are on the coast and it's always going to be warmer in the interior. But as far as why we've been warmer than anyone else, it really is our proximity to the Gulf of Alaska and the much above normal water temperatures. And also our low temperatures have been very, very warm compared to normal. And so we've had extended periods of time with low temperatures well above normal, daily records, most number of days above certain temperature thresholds.
And daily records, talk about the last week or even the last few days here. What have we seen, especially in Anchorage?
So here in Anchorage, for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, we had high temperatures that were all records. It was 73, 77, and then 72. And that's the latest we've gone into a season with 3 consecutive days at that temperature. So it really is quite unusual.
And what about the rest of the state?
There was a number of places in the state that actually set their warmest temperature ever for so late in the season. So up on the North Slope at Barrow and New Ixit and a couple other places, they were well into the 60s, mid to even upper 60s. Never so warm this late in the season. They had a south wind, an offshore wind. And then along the Gulf of Alaska coast, places like Anchorage and Cordova and Yakutat and a few others, they also set their highest temperature ever measured for so late in the season.
Brian Brett Schneider is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Annie Feit from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. Do you have a climate question for Brian? Email akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. The Fairbanks North Star Borough is the first in Alaska to be certified as storm ready. The recognition was awarded yesterday as part of a program run by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and National Weather Service. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, the certification emphasizes communication and preparation in meeting dire events.
Fairbanks Borough Emergency Operations Director David Gibbs says he and others in the borough have been pursuing the certification for years. In order to qualify, a community needs to establish a 24-hour warning point and emergency center. It also needs to plan for hazardous events and be able to receive weather warnings and alert the public by more than one way. There are other qualifications as well. Gibbs says all are aimed to help the borough deal with something like ice storms that have become more common in the interior.
You know, everybody thinks of big storms and lots of snow that could bring us to our knees, but ice generally will. And I believe it was November of 2010, where we had a really significant storm that really we had about an inch of precipitation almost immediately following a super cooled minus 25 degree temperature. That literally brought us to our knees.
Gibbs says an important step to successfully respond to the next emergency is information from the public. Borough Emergency Manager Baird Stiefel says residents are encouraged to share important needs, such as critical medications or physical limitations, with a new service called Smart Prepare. Then, when a hazardous event strikes, responders can prioritize.
Then I could realize, you know, just by looking at the area affected, if everybody's registered, that, hey, this person may need oxygen, this person. So you look at your special needs population and try to get those resources out to them.
While the state has 21 storm-ready sites and 13 storm-ready, tsunami-ready communities, Fairbanks is the first borough in Alaska to be certified. Locally, Eielson Air Force Base and Fort Greely are also certified. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly passed a resolution last week asking Governor Bill Walker to protect Denali National Park wolves and other predators on state land along the park's northeast boundary. Denali wolves commonly use the strip of state land near the Stampede Trail west of Healy, and several have been trapped or shot there in recent years. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, that's contributed to a broader decline of the park's wolf population to record lows and fewer visitors seeing the animals.
Much of the decline of Denali National Park's wolf population has occurred since the State Board of Game eliminated a protective buffer zone in the Stampede area in 2010. Wildlife advocates have unsuccessfully pressed the state to re-implement protections. The North Star Borough Assembly resolution lends weight to that effort, but revealed sharp contrasts in public opinion when it was considered by the Assembly. Fairbanks resident Heather Kopanen asked the Assembly to pass the resolution, citing the value of Denali wolves.
The decision by the Board of Game not to reinstate this limited buffer zone has caused serious setback in wolf research, as well as damage to the draw for tourists.
That sentiment was countered by commenters like Mark Knapp of Fairbanks, who cautioned that wildlife management is outside of borough government purview.
The state has a mandate to manage wildlife for sustained yield. The state has in place professional biologists and wildlife managers to manage wildlife based on sound management practices. The borough should leave management of wildlife to those qualified to do it.
Others testified that state management is heavily bent toward consumptive uses because the game board is solely comprised of hunters and trappers. Resolution sponsor, Assemblymember Van Lawrence, said he brought the measure forward out of concern for the local economic impact of Denali National Park visitors who come to see wolves and other predators.
Economic development is a power of this borough, and Denali Park is a major economic engine for the state and for this borough. Almost 600,000 people visited it last year, and more than that will visit this year. And at least half, if not more, than those visitors end up coming through Fairbanks.
Lawrence acknowledged that harvest of wolves in the contested area is not the main reason for their decline, but said it is contributing to decreased wolf viewing in the park entrance area where visitation is concentrated. Assemblymember Diane Hutchison cited tourism promotional information, noting that wolf sightings are not billed as a primary draw.
Nowhere is the wolf number one in any of these tours, and I don't think any of these tours are getting people here because they are guaranteed of a wolf sighting.
Hutchison was one of three assembly members to vote against the resolution, which passed 6-3. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Anna Rose MacArthur and Charles Enoch in Bethel, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Homer, Dan Bross and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and Annie Fite and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Through photography, video, and stories, the Salmon Project celebrates the power of salmon and community. Visit SalmonLife.org to experience salmon life stories from all across the state on Instagram and Facebook. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.